Okay. I'd like to call the meeting to order, please. May we all stand for the Pledge of Allegiance?
To the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
And if you would please remain standing for a moment of silence. And there's one thing I want to mention is that Wilson Dick Cap died this week. Many of you may have known him. He's a long-term resident in Dewey. He was a teacher and worked summers on the beach doing our beach service, and now ended up being the sole owner of Pat's Beach Service. He was also a pre-war veteran, so please keep him and his family in your mind. A moment of silence, please. Thank you. I need a motion to go out of executive session, please.
Motion to go out of executive session.
Thank you, David.
Second.
You can, I don't think you can second.
Oh, that's right. I don't have.
Can you second, Gary?
Yeah, I'm sorry.
All right. All in favor? Aye. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Gary, aye.
Aye.
Okay. Motion passes 4-0. So I'd now like to open the regular meeting. And for the record, all of our commissioners are present today, as well as our attorney, Fred Townsend, our town manager, and Sam Eckert, our chief of police. And I'd like to discuss the adoption of the agenda. There were a couple requests for things to be delayed. One is that we'd like to delay the volunteer award. And then, Anna, you wanted to delay something as well?
Yes, I had sponsored item number 3 about recommending an ordinance to the Planning Commission. I'd like to withdraw that and possibly delay it in light of a long agenda. I think that the number 6 item might be redundant with 6 and 3 might have some redundancy, and that was Commissioner Jasinski's agenda item that he sponsored. So I would just like to withdraw mine, which is number 3, if I have the support of my co-commissioners.
Okay, anybody have any objection? Okay, any objection down there?
No.
All right. So may I have a motion to approve the agenda then with those changes that we would delay the volunteer award and delay item 3
on
the
agenda?
All right, motion to approve. Second?
Second.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
All right, motion passes. Have you all had a chance to review the minutes?
Yes.
All right. May I have a motion to approve if there are no changes?
I so move.
All right. Second?
Second.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay. All right. Minutes approved unanimously. Under updates, a few quick things I wanted to mention. One is this is the anniversary week of the storm of 62, 52 years, and it's kind of appropriate that we are still working on sea level rise in view of that. And making some good progress, I might add, that is on the agenda today. The other thing I want to mention is that I've gotten word that our federal government is possibly going to approve seismic air testing on our beaches. This could go from Delaware all the way down to North Carolina or Florida. The effect, if you want to know more about it, I can send you information, but it might be good if you want to send a letter to your congressman, but it's estimated that we would kill a lot of wildlife in the sea, and that it's extremely loud and disruptive. And the idea ultimately is to look for oil and then ultimately lead to offshore drilling, which I don't think anyone in our town would particularly want unless they have financial interest in the oil industry. So at any rate, if anyone's interested, I can send you information, and I would ask the commissioners if perhaps we put this on the agenda next month, but that's up to you, so you let me know. And then, Mark, you wanted to mention the signs on the beach?
Yeah, we're looking at the sign, changing, replacing the sign at the end of our beaches. They're kind of rusting out, and we ordered one without sun on the steps as we part of the walkway as we come in. It's a sample. If anybody has any comments or thoughts or feedback, let me know.
Okay. They look nice. Can I maybe see them? As you go in or out, take a look at them, and they'll be.
The idea is that there's a glass or a plexiglass in front, and we can change it out and put whatever sign we want to alert. the town or anything going on.
And so just to make this clear, then this would be, replace all the multitudes of signs at the entrance to our beach, and we'd have one sign like this at the entrance to every dune. Is that correct?
Yes, and that it wouldn't be rusty.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Sounds good to me. All right. The first item on our agenda is a public hearing. It's on an ordinance to approve a conditional use certificate of compliance application for the restaurant brewery pub by Dewey Beer Company. Gives the MUP and parcel number on the agenda, and the building formerly known as Theo and Bubba's. We will have, is there a presentation by the applicants first, and then we have the public hearing, correct?
Mayor, before you begin the public hearing, I need to make an announcement. I just want to make, sorry, just real short. Clinton Bunning and Hal Dukes are co-owners of the building for the proposed brew pub. If the proposal is approved, Mr. Dukes would be the lessor to the brew pub LLC, which would be the lessee. So he would more or less be like a landlord. Mr. Dukes and I share an interest in an unrelated investment, an unimproved parcel of land in Dewey. To avoid the perception of bias or conflict due to my friendship with Mr. Dukes, I am recusing from further discussion of the proposal and will not vote on the matter. My past comments that I made, I feel, are impartial and fair. However, a recusal will reduce any suspicion of conflict of interest and prevent an added layer of questions. So I respectfully ask the mayor if I could be excused.
Yeah.
And would you or the town manager please text or call me when the hearing's over? Oh, no, I guess yes, because then there's a sea level rise and then there's a...
Well, no, I think what we'll do, with everyone's permission, is I will... We'll have the public hearing and then we'll vote on it, and then we'll have the second public hearing and vote on it. It's more congruent. It's more consistent that way. It's just on the agenda we have posted.
Okay, so we'll do it all at once. Okay,
yeah.
So I'll take my cell phone with me.
Right, and there's a lot of people here just for that issue that might want to leave in after that. So, okay, first we have a presentation by the applicant, Clinton Bunting, and his colleagues.
Good morning.
Good morning.
My name is Clinton Bunning, and I'm here with my partners, Mike Riley, Brandon Smith, and our chef, Bill Clifton. We are the Dewey Beer and Food Company. We're excited to be back in front of you. This process started over a year ago when we first came in front of you to ask to be a microbrewery. You sent us to the Planning Commission, and we went through the process, and what we heard at the Planning Commission, as well as at the Commission, that the amount of beer that was proposed to be brewed in a microbrewery alone was something that the town didn't like. They didn't want. They talked about a reduction of beer creation and food, particularly, you know, good quality, maybe farm-to-table type of food. And we listened. And we embraced it. And we came back and actually got even more excited about our business plan as a brew pub restaurant. We went out and partnered with Bill Clifton from Hinlopen City Oyster House. He's probably, if not the best chef in town, you know, that restaurant, if you know, is probably the best and probably the most profitable one in town. And I think it speaks to the quality of how good a chef that he is. And it was important to us because I have Mike Riley and Brandon Smith as partners who have been brewing beer for over 5 years. Mr. Riley is a physics teacher at a local high school. And Brandon Smith, as you know, graduated from Lehigh, I believe, and runs Vipers. So we're very excited to be here. We think that we are proposing a quality business for this town, a business that will improve the quality of life for this town. And in doing such, we came back in front of you, and you sent us back to planning and zoning. And we went through a very thorough process of question and answers and information. The public hearing that originally started was continued. There was a workshop that occurred. And then the second and final end of the public hearing was last week. And I invite everybody who has a question about this process or has a question about the brew pub restaurant To go back and listen to the audible minutes that are presented on the town's website, I think they're extremely thorough. And furthermore, and we said this at the last meeting, the Planning Commission are people who don't get paid. They're just, you know, doing it for the service of the community. And some of these people, particularly Mr. King, I don't know how many hours they must have spent on it. I've had the opportunity in Suffolk County, actually throughout Delaware, Pennsylvania, and southern New Jersey, to develop both residential and commercial projects, multi-million dollar projects. That might have been the most thorough questioning and most information I've ever had to provide on a project. Most of my projects were residential and sometimes mixed-use residential commercial projects that were brand new. So I think that speaks a lot to it, as well as, quite honestly, I don't think, my gut told me, I don't think the Planning Commission was in favor of the project. I don't think I had the votes. And when we went through the process, I think people saw the honesty of what we were trying to do. We went through the legalities of it. We went through the zoning of it. We even got into other aspects that were quite honestly legally unnecessary for us to answer. But we went the extra mile. For example, obtaining a DELTOT letter of no contention, which may be the fastest DELTOT letter of no contention that anybody has ever gotten, because they saw that we were not increasing the size of the business. It was staying the same. It was a restaurant with the ability to brew a small amount of beer. We also got a letter of no contention from DNREC. Having said that, and because I believe the record is so expansive, I would like to ask the town attorney to certify the fact that the entire process that we've gone through is on the record, and that it, I guess, is legally stands on its own. We support the amended ordinance as we read it today, as amended by on March the 4th. And we've gone, we believe, in trying to understanding some of the concerns by putting self-restrictions on ourselves to help ensure that we are a good neighbor, that we are a good business, and we are not a bar. Thank you.
Anything to add to that?
Yes, I think what the applicant, just for the benefit of the audience and for the commissioners, I think the applicant, when he referred to a certification, intends to make or is asking that all the proceedings that occurred at the Planning Commission level be made part of the record. I think they are, but just to acknowledge that the proceedings that took place at the Planning Commission level, the testimony that was given there is made part of the record before you today.
Okay. All right. Any questions of the applicant before we
start? Yes, I did. You mentioned self-restrictions, and in listening to the tape of the March 1st meeting, I heard some things that I didn't see reflected into the draft that was posted, I believe, on the 4th. So could you kind of recap? I want to make sure that everybody understands what we're agreeing to, potentially going to agree to. Could you highlight some of the self-restrictions that you were referring to?
Beginning from the very beginning, we reduced the amount of beer that we can create by 97%.
Okay, and you're going to measure the amount of beer in barrels?
It is, by law, measured in barrels.
Okay.
And audited by the state of Delaware Alcohol and Beverage Commission.
And what is the number of barrels per year?
4,000 maximum.
Okay, so up to 4,000 barrels is what you feel this agreement allows you to make?
Maximum, but more importantly with that, there has to be a certain percentage by law, relatively. You have to sell more food than you create beer. You have to be a restaurant that creates food. You're not a brewery that just happens to make food. You are a restaurant. If you're not, you will lose the license.
Okay. So it could be a lot less than 4,000 barrels.
Most likely it will be quite a bit less.
Would 33,640 be a reasonable maximum number of barrels?
3,640 would be fine.
Okay. But that's what's written here now. So that was one of the numbers I couldn't understand why in the testimony you were talking 4,000, but the planning commission put down 3,640. Okay. Just, you're okay with that?
Yes, sir. Yes,
okay.
Yes, we are. We also did other self-restrictions such as, and most of this was led by Mr. King, being only able to brew from 9 to 5 during the weekday, during the on season, only a maximum of 2 batches per day. I think in the off season, only being allowed to make beer when the restaurant is open.
Okay, because I think in your correspondence, you would like to actually brew on weekends.
Only on the off season when the restaurant is open.
Okay, I don't think that's in there.
As I read it, it is.
I saw the days of operation. It talked about weekdays, but I didn't see what it specifically said.
It's at line 171.
171. And it's referenced multiple places, so we'd have to check the whole document.
You say line 171?
Well, that's what I said. That's what's on this. It's provision paragraph 20.
Thank you.
What was the line number?
Is that not right? Let me look at the one in the book.
Is it the one in our folder or the one in our notebook?
The one in our notebook is the one I'm looking at.
Okay, the one in our notebook is the one we should be looking at?
Mm-hmm.
Not the one in the folder?
Tell me, Fred. Should we, Fred?
Yes.
Should we be looking at the one in the notebook or the one in here? This is the one that was posted.
This
right?
Says amended February 23rd. That's too old.
Yeah, that's too old.
Okay.
March 3rd.
Okay. So we're on. What number is it in your book? It's just up front.
I'm trying to figure out.
It's in the notes in front of the notebook. In front behind the.
It's behind tab 1. Behind tab 1.
It goes behind tab 1. All right. And this says.
Commissioner Mahler, the under amended ordinance as of March 4th, starting at 191, conditions for operation of a brew pub beyond those of a simple restaurant. It speaks to limiting us to a 7 beer barrel system, limited to 5 days a week, Monday through Friday, during the in-season defined as May 15th through September 15th. Beer creation shall be limited to restaurant days of operation during off-season defined as September 16th through May 14th. And beer creation shall be limited to a maximum of 2 brew batches per day.
Okay, I think we're going to go to the actual and you're talking to what? Just give me the line items, the line that you're talking to.
Starts at 191, conditions for the operation of a brew pub beyond those of a simple restaurant. On page 5.
I have, on my copy, I have it marked 151 on each page, not a folded line on it. So maybe we're looking at two different documents?
March 4th.
Just say March 4th, amended March 4th.
This is kind of disturbing. Okay, let's see. I've got on across the top of the page, it says March 1st, 2014, P&Z meetings, minutes, draft. March 4th, 2014. Is that the correct date?
Those are the minutes.
Those are the minutes.
That's the minutes. Okay.
Here it is.
And I've got the wrong page. So
guys, just so you know where I found mine, it's in the Manila folder.
Yeah.
Towards the back of the Manila folder, there is an amended March 4th copy of this.
Right.
That's right.
But it's towards the back of the Manila folder that we all have.
And it's line 195.
It's kind of in chronological.
Okay. I'm not going to put it on board. 191 was the
There it is, yeah, thanks.
Okay.
Do you have any questions?
Yeah, I mean, one of the things after he's done, I have a, at any time, I've no public ban, public law.
Well, while I get through this on my own, could you go ahead and list some of the other parts here, just so we are clear on what your, the other restrictions yourself proposing?
We read through a few on the creation of beer. We're also proposing to close at 11 p.m. We are a restaurant, and last seating would be at 10:45.
Okay, did that change because in the minutes they talked, or in the audio talked 10:45, but here again my copy said 10:30. So I don't know whether that changed or not.
Mr. Mueller, there was a reference in 10:45 at one point to last call being at 10:45, and it was my advice that we eliminate any reference to last call. That's an ABC function, that we just strictly indicate that that the restaurant is to close at 11 o'clock, and that addresses, you know, the issue more cleanly than making a separate reference to last call.
Okay. So
Gary, if you look at condition 18 on page 4, it says operations from 7 a.m. to 11 p.m. excuse me, 10:45.
I understand, I think, what that means, but actually, you're going to be operating the facility until 11:30, just the way I read it, because, and here again, unless something changed, and I'm sorry that I'm later with this document, but it said your last patron would have to leave at 11:30. Did I mistake that?
I think common sense tells us that if you're having a last seating at 10:45, you're not allowing any further people in at 11 p.m., that we have to have respect for the customer to get them out, but there's
no
intention.
I understand that. I'm just saying that so people understand that they're going to see lights on in your building and people walking around until 11:30.
And people, yes. And
people
working.
Coming in,
yes.
After 10:45. But community will see people milling around,
yes, sir,
walking back and forth,
yes,
going to the cars until 11:30.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Just so we're clear, does hours of operation ceasing at 11 o'clock means you won't be serving any more beverages after 11 p.m.?
We won't serve any more beverages past 10:45.
So 10:45 you won't serve beverages?
Correct.
And what is the 11 o'clock?
We won't allow any more people in, period.
Well, if your last thing is at 10:45, why would you let people in afterwards?
We could do that. It's
okay.
It's one of the things.
Yeah, so I was trying to be clear. So basically,
yeah,
10:45 is last seating and no more beverages after 10:45.
Yes.
And then when people are done, they will clear out.
Yes, that's cool.
Okay. But if you come in and you're a late eater and you want a beverage with your meal, now you can't get a beverage with your meal.
Yeah.
That makes sense to you guys? Excuse me?
I think it makes more sense just to refer to 11 o'clock as being the point in time when no more customers,
yeah,
are going to be invited in.
And take the last sitting out.
And then.
Well, if you make it 11 o'clock, now you're going to have to extend the time where people can eat and finish their meal, eat, have a food prepared, and have them eat without being rushed.
What if we just said customers must be out of the building by 11:30?
Well,
can we do that?
I don't know that you can. That's not a.
No.
That's going to be an enforcement.
Well, how do we know if we say hours of operation are from 7 to 11 and they can seat people, then if they come and eat and they linger, they could be there till 1 in the morning. And that's what we don't want.
Well.
Any suggestions?
Is that they have a fair way of operating the business, that the people will be happy and not complain to them when they get in. Well, why can't I have a microwave my dinner?
assuming, because those county council people said you couldn't.
Would you as an applicant be willing to stipulate that you won't serve any beverages after 11 p.m.?
Yes.
Can we say that, then?
If the applicant wishes to make that a condition, I think that can be incorporated.
Okay.
So there's last seating at 11, and then, I'm sorry, last seating at 10:45, and last call at 11. Is that what we're saying?
No beverages after 11.
Okay.
That was the intent. That was my understanding.
I get it. It's more for clarity. Okay. So
in other words, people could come into the building up to 11 o'clock.
No.
No.
10:45.
10:45. No one would come in after 10:45. And after 11, there would be no more beverages. So. Okay.
And if they come in, if you see them at 10:45, depending on how fast your waitresses are, it may be another 10 minutes before they get menu taken. So does that give you enough time to prepare the food and have the people ready to leave without you on rush by 11:30?
I think we have a responsibility to the town and to the commissioners if that's what you want to do. Yes, we will do what it takes to make our customer happy, and we will understand that going in, and the kitchen staff and the chef clearly, and waitresses and waiters.
And then you're doing that at 10, okay. And so all I'm saying is you put stuff down in the order.
Yes.
It's got to work for you as a business owner, and it's got to work for us. And I've never run a restaurant, so I don't know how long it takes from when a patron sits down at a table and looks at the menu and it orders, and then how long it takes you to prepare the food. So that would be my only concern, that this all, in reality, I mean, it sounds good here, does it work in reality? Because then you have a conflict later on within the code.
David, yes.
David King, Chair of the Planning Commission. I'd like to tell you where the Planning Commission felt about this. We felt that if no new patrons came at 10:45, the last call was at 10:45, whatever, that they would not be a bar, that they would be a restaurant, and we didn't feel it was our place to put restrictions on when people actually had to leave. If it's a fine dining restaurant, you would like people to be able to linger over dinner. And so we didn't feel like it was our place to say they have to kick the patrons out by a particular period of time. Bars have last call at 12:45. They are, quote unquote, closed at 1 a.m., but they have until 2 a.m. to get the patrons out and close the door. So in a bar situation where you're not serving any more liquor, you're giving people an hour after they close. We felt that why should we, 45 minutes, an hour, half an hour, whatever, that we would just leave it to whatever worked for.
So where's the 11:30 come from?
That's in an earlier draft.
Okay, so in the
final recommendation, we felt it was not our role to dictate how a restaurant operated. That by having the last call at 10:45, last seating at 10:45, no alcohol served after 11, that we kind of took care of the public's concerns about this being a bar.
Okay, so as we stand now, they can see people up to 10:45, right? And the people can eat peacefully until they're finished.
Yes.
And that can be an hour later or whatever.
Correct.
Okay.
Except they can't get a drink after what? 10:45.
Now, I'd also like for it, since my role today, I think, is as clerk to the commission for doing the final edits to this amendment, if this amendment passes. You said no beverages after 11. Now, do you mean no beverages, or do you mean no alcoholic beverages?
I mean no beverages. My intention was no beverages.
So no water, no coffee.
Water or coffee, that's
well,
what you're going to
do. The intent, okay, if the intent is that the place does not operate late, okay, people order their food, they come in, they sit down, they order their food between 10:45 and 11 at our last meeting. The kitchen's going to need some time to get food out. So food's going to arrive on the table after 11 o'clock. It's going to take them a while to cook it,
mm-hmm.
right? So we know that. But the intent of all these hours, from my perspective, is that the establishment does not stay open for a long time.
Right.
So if we allow the continual, the food is naturally going to come after the kitchen's done cooking
yeah.
it. But if we allow beverages to continue to be served,
mm-hmm.
your point about
yeah.
people lingering,
right.
you know, you end up with a place that de facto is in operation until 1
right.
o'clock in the morning.
Right.
So
and that's my problem.
He's already stated that he's voluntarily willing to say no beverages served after 11 o'clock. I think that's a reasonable way to get the operation to shut down at a time of night.
Could we say accept coffee and water because if someone wants to have coffee after dinner? I don't know.
I make good Southern iced tea, I don't want iced tea until 11:30, David. So, I mean...
All right, can we say no alcohol beverages if he agrees to it?
I would prefer that. I don't want to be in an enforcement mode where we're trying to find out what's in the pitcher that's being poured into
mm-hmm.
the patron's glass. So I'm in favor of a cleaner approach, which would be to just identify when the last call is and just agree on that and not have an end point when everyone's got to be out and the lights have to be off.
Well, doesn't last call mean alcohol?
I think that's
basically?
Mm-hmm.
All right, so if we said last call is at 11 or
10:45. It's up to you in terms of the time.
But then that means they can still serve coffee and water and iced tea.
Mm-hmm. And that may not be acceptable to Mr. Kaczynski, but you'll all have to sort that out.
I mean, it's acceptable to me. I think what he was agreeing to was more restrictive, but it's acceptable to me what you're proposing.
Well, I'm just thinking if someone does come in and they want to have coffee after dinner or something. Courtney?
Yeah, David, did you look into Bethany and Chesley at 11 o'clock? I think it's closing now. I'm not sure if the restaurants, did you see how they operate? Do people stay in those restaurants after 11 and because the 11 o'clock is closing?
David King again. Courtney, no, we didn't, but we felt that the whole notion of what was meant by closing was just too complicated. And since the ABCC provided this hour between when they're closed and when the patrons have to be out, that we felt that was reasonable. And we didn't feel that any group of patrons who are in this location, who are dining, who were not there drinking pitchers of beer would not be a burden to the community, especially since there's a 24-hour restaurant currently permitted there where you could have people lingering all night.
All right, so what if we said last meeting at 10:45, last call at 11?
I'd be more comfortable just say close at 11:30, if that's, period.
I mean, just shut the doors and everybody's out. If somebody sat down at 10:45 to eat dinner, would that be sufficient time?
Yes.
Would be.
Yes.
So you're okay with
that? You're saying, if I came into your restaurant at 10:45, I could be out of the door. I would have to be out of the door by 11:30.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. He just said he's okay with it. If he's
right.
okay with it.
Right. I have to say, the aspect of that I don't like is that on a nightly basis, anytime somebody walks by, they can call in and say the lights are on. I think people are in there eating after 11:30. I mean, I would ask you to tie your concerns to whatever it is that they're doing on that site. And if it's serving meals or feeding patrons at 11:45, is that what you find objectionable?
Mm-hmm. yes.
It is. Because currently they can operate a restaurant 24 hours at that site.
Mm-hmm.
I would rather steer clear of a time period that is a definite time period by which everyone has to be gone. Because it could be a challenge every night. Now, the applicant could meet that challenge by saying, look, we're going to have last call at 10 because we can't get people out by 11:30
mm-hmm.
or by 11
mm-hmm.
or 11:30. So that would be up to them.
Mm-hmm.
That might be the only way to deal with it.
I like it plain and simple. I say, I don't think you're going to get people calling if the place is going to close up and you're out of business at 11:30, then where the local police officer can walk by and just make that decision. Mm-hmm.
So what do you recommend we say?
I recommend that if they're willing to say that they'll close up at 11:30, then let's say doors closed, people out at 11:30.
Patrons
out. Mm-hmm.
Are you okay with that one?
With the patrons out, I mean, we have to work.
Your staff is going to need to clean up.
Yeah.
But the doors are closed, that no one, you know, no one is in, no patrons are in there after 11:30 is what we're saying. Is that correct?
Yes.
All right, so how do we word that then? Last seating at 10:45, door closed at 11?
Maybe we're not interested in the last seating anymore.
Right, okay.
So
just say the door's closed at 11:30.
Well, the doors would already be closed.
But I mean, yeah.
If he's agreeing to all patrons shall leave the facility by 11:30, we just add that to what's there. I mean,
patrons must leave by 11:30.
Unless you think it should be a separate line item. Well, I don't think we care when the last seating is if we're saying that the patrons have to be out by 11:30.
So we take out the last seating at 10:45 and add patrons must leave by 11:30. Is that all right with everyone?
Mm-hmm. Well, the only thing I could say is, you know, if I was running a little late and I wanted to get a midnight snack, and they said they don't have ribs for me. So if I'm heading over there and then I get there a quarter after, and then he's going to kick me out at 11:30. So somehow they've got to plan in when your receptionist says, I'm sorry, we're not seating after such and such time.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you're going to have unhappy customers.
That's an operational management issue.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But I mean, if people know they close, they need to get there early enough to get there. I mean,
and they may ultimately say to customers that make it earlier because they know people need longer.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's a management operational issue. We're saying all pay. If they're agreeing to all patrons have to be out by 11:30, they're going to have to reverse engineer that to what time they allow people to get there,
out.
What time they allow people
you're
to get there.
You're in an awkward position of having to go over to a table with people time to say, hurry up, eat.
They have to manage that.
We
have to manage that.
I don't think we've all. I've certainly been to a lot of establishments that have those kind of rules, and they tell you if you're coming in at a certain time, hey, you're going to have to order quick and eat quick. Because
you close that. You
know, I mean, that's an I view that as an operational issue. If they're agreeing to get everyone out by
11:30,
if we
don't put in there, we're running the risk that it could,
get
into something we don't want.
All
right, so we agree then at that point by voluntary agreement that we're going to omit the last seating at 10:45 and add patrons must be out the door by 11:30 and must leave.
Patrons must have left the premises by 11:30.
Yeah, left the premises. Leave
no
the premises by 11:30. Right. Okay.
Commissioner Maul, we also are foregoing our 24-hour food service at the grandfather's site. No live entertainment, DJ, disc jockeys, any of that. No outside speakers. No, there's no deck on the property. Inside speakers would be focused in and would be background restaurant music. And I think there's probably some additional ones that we've volunteered to restrict ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, David. The limit on wholesale.
Yes, Mr. King was significant in this, and I know it meant a lot to him. 800 barrels total may leave the site. And this is an important aspect of this, and I think Mr. Seitz was strategic in this. What we're doing here, the business model is based upon marketing. That's the whole goal, usually, with a microbrewery. They want to see if they can become popular enough, if their beer is good enough for people to follow it, and then they can go get big in an industrial park or something like Dogfish Head did in Milton, Delaware. The benefit of this, which makes it even more special to us, is the quality of food that we're going to have and pairing it with the beer. I mean, it's exciting to have someone like, you know, Mr. Clifton along with us with these guys' beer. And I wouldn't be involved in this unless I thought the beer was good, and I'm not a beer fan, quite honestly. But it is very good, and his food is excellent. And so the concept is to market it at this spot, and then for the beer to grow at a off-site location in the future. The marketing aspect is the walking aspect of this town. That's the beauty of it, with so many people in that area walking.
both from the north side of town and just in there, we feel that's also a huge benefit.
So this whole concept, in other words, basically outgrowing the capacity that you're agreeing to here, then you would move the brewing operation to an off-site facility?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so
well, not all of it. You'd still
no, we would probably
there, right?
Do specialty beers at this location at a small
so all
amount.
All the equipment would still stay there.
But yeah, because it's only a 7-barrel, and that's another thing, we were self-restricted to a 7-barrel system, which is a small system. So they would do specialty beers, one-off type of stuff, just like, again, Dogfish Head does downtown in Rogan.
So that's the equipment you bring in to manufacture beer at this location is its advertised capacity is 7-barrel?
Yeah, it's a 7-barrel system.
Okay.
And quite honestly, it would struggle to do 4,000 barrels of output. It's a small system.
Exactly.
Okay, any other questions?
Well, are there any other self-proposed?
I think there may be. Oh, yes. I can't really speak to this because Mike Rowe is our brewmaster and he can speak to this, but I'll give you my general understanding of it. Is that if there is, which again, 18 years of operation in Rehoboth Beach, Dogfish, 10 feet, with residential right behind it, 10 feet, has never had a complaint. But if there was any kind of smell that is excessive to the regular operation of the restaurant, that we could apply a condenser, I believe it's called, that would further nullify any potential smell. But again, there should be little to no smell, period. And it will not be of any nuisance, and a lot less nuisance than the average restaurant in this town.
You're the brewer, so can you explain that, what that condenser is? I know there's a lot of concern about odors, and maybe a way that the average person can understand.
Sure. Mike Riley? So what it is, in the process of making beer, you have to boil what's called wort. It's when you get the sweet liquid from the grain. And then you boil it for different reasons. One, to sanitize the water, just like you would boil water if it was contaminated, just to kill all the germs. And also to add, flavorings. And, of course, as the process of boiling, you have steam. The steam that comes off is 6%. It's called an evaporation rate, so that means if you boil 220 gallons, which we're looking to boil, you have a 6% evaporation rate. If you do the math, it's roughly 13 gallons of steam. And so that has to be released out into the air outside. The purpose of the condenser is if people thought that 13 gallons of steam being released, which is only 1 hour of the process, by the way, if that 13 gallons was offensive in any way, then what you can effectively do is put a condenser, which is a lid over the boil kettle that goes up into a cone-like shape and into a cold water bath, essentially, around the condenser, which then takes the steam, which is gas, and puts it back into water and then down the drain. It's not efficient, and it heats up the brewery, so it's more preferable to go outside. And our size, really, like I said, 13 gallons of steam. A typical dishwashing unit in a commercial dishwasher, every time you open that thing, steam pours out. That uses more steam than we would be doing.
What is the advertised efficiency of that condenser? And do they vary depending on the price?
Well, they're manufactured to order. Everything we do is manufactured to order. And it's the cost is based on how big your system is. Like, again, Mr. Bunting said, we'll be using a small 7 barrels, which is about 217 gallons total.
So is there any specs on this unit that when you write your PO that would say, I need something that is 90% efficient when removing, or 99%?
Effectively, it's 100%, because there, to give you an idea, there's brew pubs around the nation that are in an office building that would use an item like this. To call it 100% efficient, there's no such thing. Yeah. So to give you an actual number, I cannot. But to say that it'll...
Do you have any experience whatsoever? I mean, could I expect to remove 90% of the odor?
Effectively, what you're doing is you're not letting any odor outside. You're trapping it completely inside. Now, is that to say your brewery won't have an odor? Absolutely. But to say that the steam coming off will not be released outside.
So when they put the condenser unit, I envision it, you take the steam off the kettle,
correct,
get it through the condenser, you can condense the
and
steam.
Go.
Now you have a bucket, you put this stuff in, and you're saying that there's no air, nothing to be expanded at that point?
Well, I mean,
I would think you'd still need to vent.
They would have to vent, and that's why I say it's more efficient to go outside, because then it, the air that has to be vented is released into your brewery and therefore rising the ambient temperature of the brewery, which is why you don't want to do it. But
so normally you would not have this unit in place if you're forced to.
If you're forced to.
Which would be an impact on the brewing operation due to the temperature rise.
Right.
So you can't, so this unit doesn't sit between the kettle and the outside.
It's essentially a lid.
You have a current condition. I used to run a restaurant on this site.
Yes.
Yes. And does that allow you 24-hour day operation?
It does, yes.
Yes.
We are foregoing it, though.
Pardon?
We are foregoing it.
Yes.
Right. No, I understand.
Yeah.
Just because I'm kind of new to the process, and some people here may be curious how this works. So, you know, right now we're asking questions, and then there's going to be a public comment after that. Does our questioning and stuff continue after the public comment?
We can if we need
if
to.
We,
I believe we can,
okay.
You know, anytime anybody has questions, we can
okay.
deal with that. So, yeah.
Wanted to know how it was going to follow.
Right. Okay. Any other questions,
yeah.
Courtney or David, didn't show this there?
Yeah, I certainly do. So, in the planning and zoning memorandum to us, you know, with their approval, one thing they brought up was the restroom facility. The bathroom facility. And we were at our last meeting, and we were discussing the budget, and we were talking, you know, public urination came up, and it came up in the context of how much fines we have in this town for public urination. So, you know, despite anyone's anecdotal, I saw this happening, you know, the proof is kind of in the numbers, how much we're fining people for, you know, taking a whiz out in public. And right now, you know, you have a capacity 110 with one women's stall and one men's stall. And, you know, men are a little bit faster, you know, and a lot of states and municipalities are asking there to be more facilities for women. And when I look at, if you assume it's 50-50, you know, men and women, when I look at 55 women who are going to be drinking beer when you're at capacity, I'm very concerned about the one stall for 55 women who are going to be occupying the property.
I'm not sure if you're aware, but I live here year-round and
mm-hmm.
have done for quite some time. I tore down a motel between Houston Street and Clayton Street with a partner, and I built an ocean front house myself there on Houston Street that I sold a couple years ago. I live right next door. I guarantee you, I have a minimum of 10 people who urinate in my yard
mm-hmm.
every summer,
mm-hmm.
as well as, because where I'm located at the beach, they come off and they use one of my houses, or my partner's houses,
mm-hmm.
to take showers in and even defecate. And have sex as well.
Why not?
You've
got everything else.
But it
hopefully not all at the same time.
And I have a 4 to 5 year old. Yeah. A 4 to 5 year old that scares me when people do this and
yeah.
come on. It's defensive to me.
Yeah.
As well as I was a lifeguard probably for 15 or 16 years and I had to deal with some of
right.
as well. I'm opposed to it. And I propose even higher fines if you could do that. I'm looking at this while I'm talking because we actually have, I think, an additional toilet that, although it's a staff toilet, is a handicapped toilet and would be made available to the public because of its location. And I don't know if you can see it.
Yeah, I did see that on the drawing.
So in other words, that would be two bathrooms for that would be that a unisex or women's room?
That one is a handicapped, we would call it unisex, you know, in case of children or anything
mm-hmm.
like that.
Right. Okay. So you'd have a total of three bathrooms then, basically?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I completely agree with you.
Yeah. All right. Very good. Courtney, any other questions? Okay. All right.
And it's presumed that you may have questions that arise based on what you hear from the public.
Well, that's what I was going to ask the public, if they have questions as well.
I just want to just make sure that are we, any other things that we missed that happened on conditions that you agreed to?
Anything we've gotten on voluntary conditions?
Is there anything else that you voluntarily agreed to?
Oh, what about deliveries and parking? Deliveries and parking?
Yeah, again, all of this is in the record. We provided a schematic that shows where deliveries, supplies come in, deliveries, potentially go out at. And we, again, living here year-round, when I run or ride my bike or walk the kids, sometimes the trucks are a problem. For example, if I'm on a bike and somebody's getting a delivery, I can go out in the weather. Or if I'm running, I have to go up on the sidewalk, and as we know, a sidewalk is not great. Some of them are small, and they have telephone poles in the middle. This property is very lucky. I would say, probably the widest sidewalk in town. And a lot of that is because the building has been receded back a little bit, or was placed back a little bit with a little bit of an overhang, so it provides more space. Commissioner Gritty was very specific about this. And pushed hard on it. So we provided the schematic. We also have a parking lot that has 7 parking spaces, but they're double the size and length. You can park 2 cars back to back in our parking lot. So it enables for a delivery truck to be on Salisbury Street, where I've been instructed that the police chief and the commissioners don't like having those trucks out there on Route 1. We don't have to have that as a problem. We're just like, they don't have to have that. They can pull completely, and it'll be close, but completely out of the travel area of Salisbury Street, so it will not restrict any residential personnel there. Also, our property, to take the supplies off, it'll be hand trucked down our sidewalk to either the restaurant portion, and I think the schematic shows that, and or the front doors of the beer creation section, and then back out. We are not going to use the door on the north entrance of the property that's adjacent to the Exxon. That's only for emergency exit period. And we will not use any of the east doors to come through the grandfather apartment section.
Okay. Question on that. So you brought up the parking back-to-back fully within your property. And Mr. King, I'd like Mr. King to weigh in on this as well. When I looked at the drawings you provided, I mean, a parking space, depending on whether you're saying compact or whatever, but, 18, 19 feet is how deep a parking space is. So for 2 cars packed back-to-back, that would be, at least 36 feet, to do that, wholly within your property. Are you saying from the, I guess it would be the south side of your property, you've got 36 feet to do 2 cars back-to-back parking?
You can do 2 regular sized cars back-to-back parking. Quite often in the past, the residents of the apartment would do that. We could go out there and measure it. I don't know if there's 36 feet, but I think there's at least 28.
Mr. King.
Thank you. It's King, Chair of the Planning Commission. The plans that we were provided show 29 feet between their property line and their building.
Mm-hmm.
And the shoulder, the right-of-way of Salisbury Street is broader than 9 feet. I don't know exactly what it is. I think it's approximately 15 feet.
Mm-hmm.
And so they would have 29 and 15, 44 feet to not incur into the onto the cart path.
Okay, so what you're differentiating between what's their property and what's the street. So there's between their property line and the street proper, there's some room that they don't own, and you're factoring that in. Is that what you're saying?
Which would normally be used for on-street parking.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right.
Yeah, Courtney.
I've heard about the noise, smell, and traffic. I guess we go to the Planning Commission if I want to ask questions about pollution and safety with regards to issues like that, and sort of make a comment on whether they think there's any possibility of explosive.
Could I, before we go into another subject, can I ask?
Oh, you want to stick with this?
Yeah, I want to stick with this
a little
longer.
Hold that thought.
I'm sorry, Courtney. So anyway, Friday, I mean, I heard that on the tape from the first, and so Friday I went out and visited your property, and I don't know whether you realize this, I don't know how long you've been in this property, but your painting for your parking space is actually extends, I think it's about 5 feet onto the town's right away. So what you may have perceived as being your parking is really the town's. And I verified that with the survey pin in the blacktop, and then also compared that and consistently saw the line up between the other front yards and the fences, and then your had a real small post there, which obviously was on the legal property line. So I saw that, and I looked at, you know, if I was going to put in a restaurant like that, I would allow, most restaurants do allow people to walk to the front of the car and walk across and not back out with the road. And so when you add up that little walkway in the front, between the front of the car and the building, and you have a nice planted area, which I like, and you have a steel guard there, but you probably would want to have some sort of a stop for the tires. So anyway, when you add all that up, you don't have very, very much left out there. And what was interesting was that the traffic control sensor would probably be, could easily be tricked, so that when you're delivering or whatever, you're going to need to have room for hand trucks or people moving between the backs of cars and trucks. So I'm just a little worried that that's really going to work. And I, you know, I don't know whether you've actually gone out there and got a tape out. I was there by myself, so there was nobody to hold the tape. But it looked like it was going to be a little tight for me.
So the lines, we did not paint there. They were,
yeah, I assume that. Yeah. I assume that. I assume you made an assumption that was your property when, in fact, it belongs to the town.
The concept for the parking, and you see the metal poles there with the going across there, is to improve. We have some plantings there, but my goal is to improve the plantings significantly, mm-hmm. but not necessarily there. I'm going to take that out and make it so people can walk along there. Also, you see some air conditioners that stick out the side. They'll be eliminated as well because there are hazards for people walking along there. So it makes it safe for people to be able to walk in an area without having to worry about being hit by a car or anything. Secondly, I have parked in that area where I'm proposing for deliveries. I have a SUV Yukon extended. So it was a large car, and it did not trip the sensors, because I do recognize what you're talking about. And for some reason, the sensor is very sensitive, I think particularly for the patrons over on the starboard side, the west side. So it makes it pretty efficient for it to go there. That light trips quickly, and I think the goal is so people can get in and out.
On your street, it's
tripping? Very, it trips quickly.
Not this morning.
Well, for me, it's
and in fact, what was interesting that the who's our trash company?
Waste Management.
Waste Management. He was trying to turn into the street when I was trying to leave, and I was actually parked maybe 3 feet or four, or not parked, but sitting there waiting for the light to turn. He was cautious turning in. I mean, I was just waiting to see whether he was going to be able to make the turn. So he had a little bit of he was a little concerned about turning in with that large truck. That just rang up, just something that put a 5 gallon seal for me, the difficulty that he perceived in turning into the road. And that was on a day when there was nobody around.
I guess the fact that this property is a restaurant, and it used to be one of the most successful restaurants in town when it was operated via
I just have to go under the assumption of that, and it's working fast.
Just kind of rounding out this point, because it's kind of hard, especially if you're not looking at a diagram on a wall, but based on what you said and Gary, your questions and whatnot, I'm basically operating under the assumption right now that on the south side of your building, you'll have a walkway along the south side, then a set of parked cars, and when you have delivery operations, the trucks will pull up kind of parallel rather than perpendicular style behind those row of parked cars.
Yes.
And that where the trucks pull up, they will not go into the roadway, but they would lead a little bit into the town's right of way, typically during your course of operation.
Yes, sir.
Okay. All right.
Okay. Gordon, did you have any other questions?
No.
I have more questions. Okay.
Okay. David, first, what is your
answer? I just want to speak to this pickup and delivery issue. The Planning Commission spent a lot of time on
this. Yes, they did.
And I think this was pivotal on Don Grady's final decision. To some extent, the parking of the delivery pickup trucks versus patron parking is, as the Commissioner Jasinski said, it's an operational, it's a logistic. We felt that if they're not serving breakfast, they could arrange to have all the deliveries in the morning when that entire pad is available for deliveries and pickup. And so we didn't see it as such a problem between patron cars and delivery trucks, because that could be a problem. But they have agreed to not use the streets, the carpet path, for deliveries, nor the shoulder on Route 1, and we felt that that mitigated a lot of concern. The other is when we ran through all the numbers, the amount of deliveries and delivery trucks, delivery activity was not going to be significantly larger than the deliveries that you would expect for the restaurant operations that are currently committed on the site. And in particular, the pickup of the spring grain, which again, they have stipulated that all the spent grain will be stored inside the facility in sealed containers, and the expectation from the Planning Commission's perspective, looking at the numbers, is that this would be picked up three or four times a week by a farmer driving a pickup truck, collecting 2 to 4 50-gallon barrels of sealed closed containers. So again, that's not going to create a lot of traffic congestion or there aren't going to be large trucks involved.
And it would be during the week, right? Not on weekends.
Before you leave, David, from my experience, planning commissions tend to do site surveys on Sunday mornings while a lot of people are in church. When did you do your site survey on this property?
We all walked around the property as individuals.
Okay. And that was summer, winter?
That was winter.
Okay.
That was between the 11th of January and the 1st of March.
So in effect,
we all spent
you didn't have the time to actually observe it in the peak load condition?
Peak turf load condition.
Yes.
No.
Okay.
But we do have other businesses that are more intense than what we felt was the...
When you return this facility here in the wintertime, you said in January?
I was walking around the property in January.
About what time of the day?
During the day, the morning.
Okay. Well, somewhere, and I'm a little disorganized because I was reviewing the wrong document last night, but somewhere it talks about two spaces for each apartment being provided on that parking lot. And so I'd like to explore that, understand that, because this morning it appeared to be one of the ladies was getting in her car, I guess, to go to work or shopping. And so if that's the case, you'd be parking there when maybe a delivery truck was trying to get in there in the morning, like you suggested. So can you explain a little bit about
it? We were informed by the building official, Bill Mears, that the apartments predate the zoning code requirements for two, and that they are grandfathered to not require off-street parking for the apartments. We, in an earlier draft, put in the requirement that spaces be provided, two spaces for each apartment. And in our deliberations, the Planning Commission felt that it was more important to provide patron parking than parking for the apartments. The apartments would be leased with that understanding. So we didn't see that conflict.
Okay, so that requirement is no longer in place.
That requirement is no longer in place.
Okay.
Additionally, I provide the judgment for the apartment with parking passes, default parking passes.
Okay.
So it is more important for us to have the patrons park there
sure.
than it is, my residents.
Mm-hmm. I just wanted to make sure I understood how that works.
Okay. Any other questions, commissioners? Any questions from the public? Questions? Yes. Please come up and identify yourself, please.
Can you announce the rules of our public testimony?
We're having questions first.
My name is Sean Rogers of the Exxon Station. It's going to be right in Jason. For the business, as far as the business goes, I haven't had problems with it. My only concern is the alleyway that's between the two businesses. And I don't know if you're aware of it or not, because I know you've only had the business for a couple of years. I didn't know you at first. I talked to Nick from next door about that alleyway, and actually part of that building infringes on my property. Even the overhang, the door outside, the door should have never been put there to start with. Stanley Bell had the building before that was under the understanding of that, but last summer I had a lot of problems with the renters in there. And I never talked to you about it, which I should have. I only talked to your maintenance manager, and he really gave me a lot of grief about it. He told me that I could not lock that fence, that he would call the fire marshal, and I tried to be a good neighbor. My concern is if there's an exit door or a kitchen door in that alleyway, if I have a liability or not, because that's where I keep my scrap metal and stuff. I try to be a good neighbor and I'll work out what I can, but I want the concern to be known and I don't want to have any liability as far as the south side of that building goes. When I look in this drawing, I see a door. I don't know if you have an existing door or what the intent is, but I don't know if I have a liability there. So I think that should be addressed. I don't know how you feel about it, but yeah, I mean, we'll sit down and talk about it.
I can close the door. We don't need to do that.
Okay. That's my own concern, and I want you to pass a lot to it. As far as I'm concerned, all it's going to do is bring me more business. But, I'm sure the residents, they're here to live, and I'm here. Now I have a mother that's right next door, but I couldn't sleep there at night. But as far as the people walking up and down the street, I see them all by the store, I see them at the pizza place. You guys open up there, I think it's going to be not a really good one.
Are there any other questions?
Could I ask the gentleman a question here?
Yes. You mean Sean?
Yes.
Oh, yes. Sean, yes.
Sean, I'm a little confused when I looked at the north wall, which would be closest to your...
The north side.
North side of their
north,
village.
Right.
So currently, there is some projection out.
Correct.
Is that projection in your right-of-way?
Yes.
Okay, so the plans that they have shown us, they're making effectively a structural change to that building.
It looks like that out building is eliminated by the site plan that I look at. It looks like the wall is flat on either side.
Yeah, so when they make that change, will they now be off of your right of way?
Yeah, there's the overhang, I believe, might infringe.
So their line is really, so that little piece of their building, I think they have a door in there or something like that. So that's way on your property.
Yeah.
And the overhang is even still on your property. So that property,
right.
They don't know.
Right. Do you have a good survey for that?
Yeah.
Could you see where the line was?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And where do you say that there?
I think there's two pieces of the structure that are off over on you.
Yeah.
And if we don't need it.
Mr. Bell, Mr. Stanley Bell, I guess, did that, and they just kept, like, supplies or something. We don't need access on that side at all.
So you're modifying the structure at that point to remove that little bump out?
If that's what John wants me to do, yes, I will.
Okay. Are there any other questions? Yes, please come up and identify yourself.
Question from the public comment?
If you have a question about the application, fine. If you're making comments, that will have to wait until we get to that portion. Okay? The questions are allowed now. Please identify yourself and where your property is.
I'm very good. I'm very good.
Thank you.
When you talk about 800 barrels or 4,000 barrels of that, we talk about per year, per month?
Per year.
Per year. Okay, and what kind of food do you plan for?
There should be a menu in the...
Let me just tell you.
What's your question?
Yeah. I'm Bill Clifton. I'll be the chef of this establishment. We're going to serve food that's not your Dewey Beach food.
Good.
I'm pretty sure you're all tired of eating pizza and chicken wings and burgers at every single place. That's not what we're going to do. I'm going to provide you with a better place to eat and a better option. So the families that come here to Dewey Beach that have a good time on the beach and want to go into Rehoboth to eat, stay here. That's what we want to do. I come from a large farm family. I use farms at Hillwood and Leewood's house to death, and I plan on doing the same thing here. It's not going to be high-class food where it's over your head, but it's going to be right there in the middle, and it's not going to be crazy expensive. It's going to be great local food done right. That's what we're going to do.
And the requirement would be that it would be complete meals and not just sandwiches.
Absolutely.
And things of that nature.
Correct.
Do you actually have vegetables?
Yeah.
Maybe we actually have a vegetable in Dewey?
What do you mean by ethnic? No, it'll be American food.
Myron, any other questions?
Just want to make an endorsement to what you said about what could be served after 11 o'clock. I think coffee should definitely be served because if somebody feels like that, a little bit too much to drink, and the restroom says, sorry, we can't give you any coffee.
Mm-hmm. Well, that was kind of my thought too, but I kind of got overruled. So, all right, go ahead.
Mayor, I want to point out that I think most everyone in the audience knows this, that we can't dictate to the restaurant what food to serve, what style
right.
of food to serve, and they can make representations to us that we can consider as to mm-hmm. what they intend to do, but we can't shut them down at a later date because they've made significant changes to their
mm-hmm.
menu or to their style of food. So there are minimum restrictions that relate to the completeness of the meal
mm-hmm.
to be a legitimate restaurant in the eyes of the ABCC. And you, Mayor, just indicated that, and they assented to the notion that they have to serve complete
meals.
But beyond that, we don't
right.
have a lot to say.
So
right.
we are not going to be approving their menu every year.
We are not, and by granting them a conditional use permit, it's not an imposed condition that they serve meals that are paired with a beer and whatnot. These are all very vague standards which we can't enforce.
So you mean there's no guarantee that I get rid of?
There's no guarantee that you get rid of, no.
Okay, we have another question, correct?
Yes, I have
okay.
two questions. My name is Paul Bauer. I bought a condo on Salisbury Street, and I'm getting kind of red and late on this particular issues and applications for
mm-hmm.
clients. But my question today, two questions. First is about traffic issue. I mean, we just come upon that the site survey was done in January. That's winter. That's not a typical business day. I can sit on my porch during the summer and count the number of trucks that come down. Even though they're servicing the end of the street, they come down the street. And the parking, cars park back to back. I do realize that the deliveries are going to be parked parallel to the building. There's not enough space. They still have to turn around and go to the end of the street. to get out.
Can I ask you a question? You're saying trucks go to the end of the street?
Yes.
I mean, I just did that this morning, and I have an E150 truck, so it's not a big truck.
No, I'm talking about delivery trucks, beverage trucks, the carry on.
So a large delivery truck is going to go to the end of the sweet street.
On the chopper.
Why would they just back up?
They don't. It's just much easier to go to the end of the street, turn around, because there's the whole space at the end of Salisbury.
So in a condition where you'd have little kids heading to the beach with mommy, and the car, these trucks are trying to turn around in that same general area.
That's correct.
Wow.
All right, let me get some comments from the applicant on that.
I thought they would back in, too. I
thought they'd just go in and back out. I mean, can we just ask them to back out? I can agree. I wouldn't want them running down the end of the street.
Yes, we can dictate however we want the traffic pattern to go.
Are you okay with that, if they just back up?
If there's some way to report it, I mean, you can't have his business person out there directing traffic.
No, but they can tell their delivery people ahead of time that they must back up.
It's just that, especially in the summer when you have public parking on both sides of the street, there's just no way a large truck, delivery truck, can really navigate down the street.
Yeah.
I really find it irresponsible that you think that if you go out there, if anyone's been there during the prime season, there's barely enough space for people to walk to the beach when there's traffic on both sides of Salisbury Street. Another question, I'm not familiar with you brought this up about, I'm understanding about the quality of the restaurant and what type of image you're trying to project, but is there some type of regulation that, is there a certain ratio between food bill and alcohol?
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
yes.
Someone can just
pile
on.
Can I ask Fred to answer that one?
That would help reduce over drinking.
Yes, definitely.
The Alcohol Beverage Control Commission would require of any brewery pub licensee that they operate primarily as a restaurant. They would, as a matter of course, audit the initial 6 months of this operation to satisfy themselves that this operation is primarily a restaurant and not a brewing facility. Their rule of thumb, as I understand it, is that proceeds from the sale of food and non-alcoholic beverages would need to meet a 60-40 ratio versus the sale of alcoholic beverages. However, the commissioner, in the event that there is a complaint or concern raised about whether they are operating primarily and substantially as a restaurant, would be able to take into consideration the actual nature of their operation. The 60-40 may or may not be strictly required. This question could arise in the context of how to consider revenues generated from the wholesaling of alcohol from the site. So it can't be part of the record that this operation will be necessarily restricted to a 60-40 ratio of food sales versus alcohol sales, but that the commissioner would impose, it's a state statutory requirement that they operate as a restaurant to the satisfaction of the commissioner of the Alcohol Beverage Control Commission.
And that would be the state commissioner?
Yes.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
It just seems that there's an awful lot with it too. But there's other states that are far stricter than that, and it's enforced. But if you have nothing in place, then you don't have the guideline to go by. Which is, to me, I know it's not your fault, but that's awful weak. Because that's the only way that you're going to really force the establishment to monitor, the alcohol serving as well as their food. I mean, if you have food, it's going to help, simulate some of the alcohol and people drinking. I know it's not that always the establishment is doing alcohol service. Some people already had a few drinks before they came to the restaurant, and then just cap it off of there. I'm sorry to hear that, but that's what's in place.
Are you any other questions?
No, that's it. I appreciate the time.
Okay, thank you, Tom. Any other questions? Yes, Clint, go ahead.
Can I respond really quickly? Justin, on the delivery issue, is, we could restrict delivery times to a certain specific time, such as very early in the morning, avoid it very late at night, and eliminate any issues, or at least try to reduce the issues of, you know, my 4 or 5 year old walking to the beach or something like that on that street. And secondly, I think the biggest restriction here, and I recognize your point on the alcohol issue, is the fact that we are restricting ourselves to being closed at specific times that we went out of bar, and that the if you look at the layout, I think we only have 10 bar seats or at the tasting table or something. It's very small, mostly all tables.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you, David. And
David, thanks, sorry for jumping up, but I think it's important for the town commissioners to understand the due diligence that the planning commission did and how we arrived at certain considerations. We didn't feel that there was going to be a significant increase in large truck traffic due to this operation versus the operation under its previous conditional approval. And we felt that if there were, it was very clear to us that if there are any problems at all about how the traffic delivery group us, whatever, if there are any problems, that's a matter for the town police to work with. They've taken care of issues in the past when there have been problems with delivery trucks or people parking in various areas, and that we felt that the police department, the town and the police department would make sure, would work with the applicant to make sure that there was a safe condition. Part of the conditions here about pickup and delivery and tour buses and things is that they cannot use the cart path and have to operate in a manner that is safe. And so we felt that police were the enforcement agency.
Before you said that, and I hear you're using the same words today as it on the tape, and I heard repeatedly, assumptions, we assume, and you know what I see here is, 39 or so conditions put onto this thing, and your original intention was to have 50 some conditions, which apparently I would assume your commissioners felt they needed those at some point in time. It kind of concerns me that you had 50 conditions that you in due diligence felt you needed. They went away. Now we have 39 conditions, and I guess the question may be going to Sam or maybe going to the town manager is, how in the heck do you enforce these rules without sending somebody, and I'd like to know who that person is, out with a binder with all these things enumerated? I don't see how, you know, we can talk about what we hope, we wish, we think, we assume, but when we leave this room today, and maybe if it's voted and given a go-ahead, how do we actually implement the controls on 39 some conditions? I don't see how that's going to work.
Well, and actually,
people forget.
So the rationale for the larger number of conditions was we could have just stipulated that the applicant had to abide by all federal, state, county, town code. Period, and then they would have to carry all of the code books around with them. We felt that we wanted to enumerate in the ordinance many of those. That was an approach that was taken by a previous attorney who started the draft with the all of the conditions from 185.25(c)(1). For restaurant operation, felt that it was important to embed those in the conditional improvement document.
But, you know, I'll proffer that my theory was, when I heard all this on the tape and the history of this doing the due diligence, was that you guys had some serious concerns about whether the state, the county, or the federal government would actually enforce these things that you all felt were important to do with each. For the health and welfare, safety, and general conditions in Dewey Beach. So you started out that assumption that you weren't going to go along with this applicant
unless all these things were conditions in place. Then came along the legal opinions where, well, you can't enforce this, you can't enforce that, and now you've shrunk back to the things you actually can legally enforce, but you still have a word about some of these other things that are they going to actually do?
Oh, absolutely not. There is no question in the minds of the majority of the Planning Commission that these conditions will protect the health, safety, and welfare of the community, and that these conditions are enforceable in two different ways, but that these conditions are enforceable, and if this went to court with a challenge between the town and the applicant, that the town would prevail. It is true that, so your first question is about the number of conditions.
Mm-hmm.
I believe the Planning Commission would be fine to eliminate most of the conditions and just stipulate that they will operate under the relevant codes. And in fact, I believe that the town attorney is going to recommend that many of these conditions that are in 185.25d will to just eliminate them to streamline.
They didn't apply.
Well, no, they do apply, but they're under 185.25d.
Well, they're already in the law, is what he's saying.
Yeah, well,
they're already in the law.
There are things in your...
For example, they must provide seating for more than 35
people. I mean, there's things in the draft that don't belong.
There are about 8 or 10 conditions that we feel are important. We, being the Planning Commission, feel are important, that are unique to this situation, this location, the proposed use, and that are necessary for protecting health, safety, and welfare. And I believe the Planning Commission would be fine to delete some of the extraneous things, like they must provide seating for more than 35 patrons.
Did the Planning Commission ever consider the fact that, you know, somebody in the public that weren't plugged into this as much as you guys were, that maybe when they saw 39 conditions, that flag would have said, wow, what's going on here that we have to have 39 conditions?
Well, Gary, you've been on red team reviews and things like that, and you know if you prepare the initial draft documents going into that, that it is better to provide to approach the red team review strategically such that you delete sections rather than try to craft comprehensive, sensible. I mean, you cannot craft new language on the fly that is consistent with everything else. So we tried to craft language that was comprehensive. And then
I think you make a good point, trying to craft wording on the fly, such as today, is probably not a safe thing to do.
Now, I also believe, and I think this goes to perhaps the heart of your question, when we left our meeting on the 22nd of February, I thought that the town could not enforce any of the conditions about the production or distribution sale of alcohol. And I thought that the Planning Commission was going to vote no. At the meeting on March 1st, we had input the town attorney who was providing advice to the Planning Commission. Had talked to the commissioner of the ABPC. We had a lot more thought on his part and a lot more input, and it was very clear to the Planning Commission that, one, the town could enforce these conditions, and two, we got additional information during the public hearing portion of that meeting and after from the applicant in response to a lot of questions. That there were reasons not to have concerns about additional truck traffic or any of the other operations of the facility as proposed and as would be operated under the state commission.
David, since you're up there now, is there anything else you need to add about the Planning Commission's recommendations? Because I don't know, as we've officially stated what the vote was and so forth. At this point, perhaps we should before the public
right.
hearing.
I did provide you a memorandum
yeah.
By Planning Commission.
But I think members of the audience may not be aware of
that. And so I can certainly read that.
Okay.
So this is to the town commissioners from the chair of the Planning Commission. We are required to give a report on
yeah.
the recommendation. On January 11, 2014, we referred a conditional use application from Dewey Beer and Food Company, the applicant, for operation of a 110-seat restaurant with ABCC restaurant alcohol and brewery pub licenses at 2100 Coastal Highway. The Planning Commission held a series of meetings and public hearings on February 1, February 22, and March 1, 2014 to gather information and public input and to render a finding regarding the appropriateness of such an operation at this location and conditions that should be imposed to protect the health, safety, and welfare of the community. This memorandum is offered as a requested report and includes the Planning Commission's recommendations. I would note that the Planning Commission spent over 8 hours in public meetings giving public testimony and questioning the applicant, and I believe that probably it is true to say that each individual on the Planning Commission spent well over 80 hours, including their research and reading minutes and reading on tape. I certainly spent a lot more than that. Based on its discussions and public input received in response to this application prior to the end of its March 1st meeting, the Planning Commission considered a wide range of conditions to attempt to regulate operations in a manner consistent with RB2 zoning requirements and the nature of this specific site. The final draft conditional use ordinance approval ordinance to develop through this process is attached. This draft ordinance was put to a roll call vote of the members of the Planning Commission. The vote was 5 in favor, myself, Commissioner Deedy, Gritty, Palmer, and Sipe, and 1 opposed, Commissioner Paraskevich, to recommend approval under this set of conditions. And then I include some pros and cons, comments from the individual commissioners, and some issues that we wanted to raise to your attention that I don't believe are germane to this discussion at this point in time. But one of them had to do with the potentially adding a bathroom, not as a condition, but it's just something for the applicant to consider.
So
I believe that it is, so for me personally, and I believe this reflects the opinion and the feelings of the majority of the Planning Commission, this is not going to be another bar. It will be a restaurant to which there are stipulations of greater than 60% food sales, which I think really means it's going to be food-oriented, closing at 11 p.m., that there's going to be limits to the beer making beyond what is allowable or permissible by the ABCC. There's going to be beer making between 9 and 5 during the weekend season. They're only going to do beer making when the facility is open at the restaurant. They're not going to brew more than 2 cycles a day. So at most, the boiler's going to be going for 2 hours a day. I assume once in the morning, once in the afternoon. That there will be no nuisance odors. This was a big deal from the public. There will be no nuisance odors from the beer making process, and that all spent grain that will be stored inside until it's ready for pickup. Then all pickup deliveries, drop-offs will use the parking area and parking pad in a manner that will not create an unsafe situation. And that tours, if any, will be limited to more than 20 people, and buses or vans that are used to drop people off or pick them up would be parked in an off-site, off-street location.
Question, Mr. Kane. Do you feel the applicant's changing the staff toilet to a unisex patron-accessible toilet adequately addresses the...
I think that would, yes. I think that, you know, we didn't feel it was our role to enforce it on them. Again, that's kind of an internal logistics issue, but I think we would all welcome.
Okay. I know. One other question, David. A lot of these conditions started because of the Grotto's death. Is that correct? And were been used in this application as well because they worked at Grotto, at the outdoor patio?
So the Grotto's deck was an expansion of the restaurant, and the lawyer who drew up the initial draft ordinance resolution approving that enumerated all of the conditions from the town code in 185.25D, as well as many of the conditions in this document, as well in response to public concerns about noise and odor and traffic and congestion and trash. And so we just thought from an operational efficiency perspective, we would import those here. And so much of the language other than specifically related to the production and sale of beer comes straight out of the Grotto's conditional use approval.
Right. And that's one of the reasons there's so many conditions is we started with a lot of those from there, which have been successful, as I know. So, all right, anything else from your report or any other questions today?
You mentioned the vote, okay, and I'm confused on this because it appeared that what people were voting on in the audio tape was effectively an outline that you were going to update at a later time and then collaborate via email and then have an email vote. So the vote of 5-1, is that the vote of the outline? Or is that a vote that was done on the email trail?
So the vote was on the changes as we discussed and agreed to on.
Okay, so that was effectively the outline.
That was the ordinance.
Yes.
I made the changes and distributed that to the other members of the commission, all of whom responded that they felt that was an accurate representation of what was discussed.
So they had a vote, so that was effectively a vote.
So that was a vote that the updated draft, we took three. We
not
took
a vote.
If I could, you know, this process is not unlike a lot of processes where you've got a significant piece of legislation, let's call it, lots of provisions, number of pages, great deal of public interest. It's not realistic to assume that that the eventual motion to adopt an ordinance such as this is going to be contingent upon some modification. The modifications were made part of the motion to adopt, and that required some effort by Mr. King, acting as a scrivener, to incorporate those modifications into the ordinance that then was presented to you as amended March the 4th. So that's how I would characterize what happened. There was no subsequent vote, no subsequent deliberation. This is their recommendation, and this document is meant to reflect the motion that was passed 5-1 by the Planning Commission.
Well, I would only add to that, and we took three votes that afternoon. One was to approve to approve the conditional use approval document with changes to be made by me, providing there was no substantive controversy or error in that document. And then the second vote was to recommend. And that was a 6-0 vote. And that was conditioned on it being an accurate representation. And I got feedback from each of the commissioners that it was an accurate representation. A few minor, hints and outs, but nothing significant. And the second vote was, given that the recommendation for again.
Okay.
That process, if I could just add one more bit, that process is not unlike the process we're in right now, whereas there's been some discussion of making some revisions to what's been presented to you in the event that that ordinance were passed. That's what happened at the Planning Commission level as well.
Okay, and I mean, it sounds reasonable to, if you're making a lot of changes and things are confusing as they are today, that you want to make it sure you get it right. I think that's what you're saying. Let me understand something here, because we just talked about this, the previous person testified. On your second bullet, on your memorandum, you said our recommendation is based on plenary site plans that are not certified as being accurate. And I think that was Mike T., and I can't pronounce his last name, made a point of that in the audio tape. And is therefore predicated on all renovation, redevelopment being contained in existing commercial space, as attested to earlier by applicant, prohibit any additions to or modifications of existing residential or exterior open space for use. So now we're finding that there has to be a change to the footprint of the building.
So we saw this as two issues. The first issue being the relationship between this property and the adjoining property and potential encroachment. And the Planning Commission felt that was something between those parties and did not affect a planning decision one way or the other on this application, that the encroaching property, the encroaching buildings, which seem to shelter egress at ingress and egress, did not contribute to this application, did not impact this application, and I believe that they would all feel if that got taken off or left on was not a significant effect. What we wanted to ensure was that they would not build structures or store large propane tanks or something else in the areas that are designated on their property as open space or parking space.
Well, I just read it and it looks like the wording was kind of specific about additions or modifications.
Right. So Commissioner Karaskevich is a professional
right.
in this area, and his opposition to this approval, I think, was on many different levels. Some had to do with concerns on, the detail level was his concerns over some of the operations and how they may potentially adversely impact the community. But more importantly, as a professional, he felt that he could not support an application where the documents provided were not certified by an architect or a land surveyor. The town has never required those for their application. The Planning Commission did not feel that we individually incurred liability for approving a use with an uncertified plan. Commissioner Karaskevich feeling that if he approved uncertified plans, that he may personally or professionally incur liability.
Was that alarming to anybody on the commission that when you did your site visit, you say, well, wait a minute, that's not in this drawing that they gave me. What's going on here? Did that ever come up?
That did come up, and Mr. Mears flagged that as well.
Okay.
The building official in his review of the he did report to us.
Because that has some other implications.
Right, and he did report to us at the March 1st meeting, I completed with the March 1st meeting, that he walked the property and met with the applicant, and that for his purposes, before any building permits are issued, he's going to need a site survey, a certified site survey. He's going to need detailed certified architectural drawings. As is the county building and planning office, as is DENREC, at the minimum for this. And we felt, as the Planning Commission, this went beyond our purview. It went beyond what the town has done in many other applications. It is true that one of the resolutions of the planning, it wasn't voted, one of the personal commitments that the planning commission made to itself is when this is over, that we're going to go back to the code and look at the requirements for site plan, preliminary site plan reviews, and streamline those out for what is needed for various kinds of applications rather than the same 54 requirements for something that, as Mr. Mears has said in the past, the town has never required for this kind of modification. And so Mr. Mears said, tracks the town for this level of site modification is the information that he got with the clarification from the sidewalk with the applicant was sufficient for the town to meet. Again, concerns about what kind of construction standards are going to be used and safety from that perspective are going to come in when the county and the town do their building permit evaluation. They're going to look at the specific uses and construction standards required, and we're certainly assured by town attorney and by building official that the construction standards would be such a manner that this would be a safe operation.
Well, I hope it, you don't feel like I'm being picky in that question.
No,
it's just, you know, I've had the personal experience of after the town leaving a site, and the next thing I know, there's an air conditioning compressor in the middle of my driveway. So, you know, I'd be concerned about for the gentleman and Exxon. You never know what he's going to find there. We found a compressor that we had to navigate around, and the subsequently had to have it removed. So I think that's important to the site plans and active drawings. I think that's history.
And that was Mr. Karaskevich's, one of Mr. Karaskevich's points, and I believe that the rest of the planning commission felt that by stipulating that they would not add the exterior footprint outside the building, that was sufficient for us.
Okay, so now it looks like they are. One of the things that...
We are not adding anything.
Well, you subtract.
I'm sorry?
You subtract.
Yes. Okay. Yes, unless Sean wants to utilize that portion of the building at his will.
Well, that the structure that he was talking about is attached to your building.
Yes, and he and I will have a discussion if he wants to utilize it.
And so my word is wrong. It was modified. Not,
yes. We are not expanding.
We're not
the existing restaurant. We're keeping it as a restaurant. We're not expanding.
Right. So he's just going to modify it.
We felt that the concerns of the planning commission were about the change of use within the envelope of the existing building and with regard to the open spaces on their property.
On the tape of March 1st, one of the things that we're always used to hearing when we look at situations of change in zone or usage, land usage, is kind of a checklist. You know, is there a change of character in the community? Was there a mistake in the general or the comprehensive plan? Was there a mistake made by the commission in setting up the zoning codes? And I think that the one thing that's kind of, I mean, to me, all these questions are things that are normally asked in these proceedings and are answered. Was that discussed in planning commission deliberations, mm-hmm. and these kind of significant questions?
Mr. Mueller, those questions, those issues you're referring to, I think, are issues that would typically arise in the course of consideration of an application for a variance.
Okay.
Well, this is not a variance.
There was discussion here, I think, on the tape about, I think Mr. King was part of the conversation about RB2, RB3, which use level was appropriate?
Certainly the impact of this proposed
use at that site is an entirely appropriate consideration for planning and zoning and making a recommendation. It's entirely appropriate for you to consider the nature of the adjoining uses, the adjoining uses, the neighborhood, and so on and so forth, in determining whether this is an appropriate location for the proposed use.
Well, and one of the criteria that we use to make that is has there been a change in the character of the community? So that's what I was trying to ask.
You said these are considerations that the Planning Commission would typically raise, and you asked whether that particular question was,
okay,
was raised.
Let me retract my question.
I think the simple answer is that the Planning Commission considered all of this.
Okay.
Again, we spent individually and collectively a lot of time on this issue, and I think we went from a point of how can we define, I as a planning commissioner would have preferred to have addressed the brewery pub issue as a zoning issue. And then entertain an application, as we did for the microbrewery. We approached it in a different manner, but I think we went as a commission, certainly me as vice chair and then chair, went from how does one define a brewery pub within a restaurant that is consistent with this location, zoning district, and then can we enforce that, and then realize that maybe we couldn't enforce that, and then realize that we could enforce that, and in that path we addressed a lot of this. One of the questions was, one of the inputs from the public dealt with, we, the public, don't want any more liquor licenses in town. Too much alcohol. That's not a zoning issue. That's a policy issue. There was no existing policy when this application was submitted, despite the fact that there's been talk amongst your predecessors on the town council for years about that. We don't have an ordinance prohibiting or moratorium prohibiting liquor licenses. The state has determined that a brewery pub as a secondary use inside of a restaurant is a permissible use, that it's not a significant change in the use, and we took that as guidance. From my individual perspective, I would say that perhaps if this is any change in the use, that it is a growing up of the beer fueled culture, if you will, of Dewey Beach, from a bar to something that is a more adult, more sophisticated, more attractive kind of operation. And with these conditions, I think we will have, we can't force them to serve this.
Yeah.
But I think there would be foolish not to have some specialty, beer flavors, this thing. Pair with it here. And so if it is in any manner a change of use, it is a positive change in terms of fine dining at better restaurants. We did not feel that there was going to be any substantial, as the majority of the Planning Commission did not feel that there was going to be any kind of significant disruption to the community over and above what would occur if the applicants were to run a 110-seat, 24-hour restaurant on that facility.
Okay, we have to cut this off. I mean, it's getting way too long. I'm sorry, Gary. I'd asked you to get all your questions answered before.
Well, the questions I'm answering, Diane, today are not only for me, because I know most of the answers, but for the public so they can understand what's going on.
Well, yeah.
The public does not understand what happens in these cases too often. So I do a lot of the answers to the questions, obviously, but I think it's important that everybody...
The problem is it's getting to the point where people are getting restless,
well,
and
fine.
it's time to move on.
If you want to move on, that's fine. I like to be thorough.
Okay.
And I don't want to make
You've been very thorough. So let the record show that Gary's been very thorough. Okay. A couple things I have to say before we go into the public hearing. It is my understanding, although I couldn't find it when I went through the ordinance just now, that it said that any verbal agreements that were made verbally apply.
I think the way to deal with this is to say that is to ask the applicant whether the applicant is opposed to any of the conditions which ultimately are made part of the motion.
Mm-hmm.
You've got a representation. First of all, I don't know what motion we're going to have, so that remains to be seen.
Right.
But you've heard from the applicant that the amended ordinance dated March the 4th contains conditions which are acceptable to the applicant.
Mm-hmm.
So I prefer that to any reference to verbal agreements that are not specified.
Well, I'm thinking we talked about the truck issue, the employee bathroom being used for the public.
Well,
that was going to work out the issue with the neighbor,
the
Sean. Those
are going to need to be added as part of the motion. So the motion to approve, if there is a motion to approve,
mm-hmm.
will include the addressing of a number of issues that the maker of the motion thinks need to be made
right.
part, and then the seconder, and so on and so forth. So,
okay.
So to that point, one question, just really just so we're clear about what we're passing. One of the things in this document says, you know, that it references things that they've presented outside of this document, right? It says, like, representations they've made outside. So there's, you know, I've got, you know, my big, thick one-inch folder of, you know, different
mm-hmm.
types of things. Are we going to explicitly say that these documents external are hereby incorporated, or are we just going to leave the statement as
is? I think we can do either one. So whoever makes the motion should address that issue.
And I'm asking Fred for your opinion. So.
Well, I'm not comfortable with the notion that there are going to be restrictions imposed against this applicant that aren't made part of the ordinance.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay. And
there are a couple of examples of provisions in the ordinance that I will recommend deleting at, you know, whether during the course of the discussion if they come up or prior to the making of a motion.
Mm-hmm.
There are a couple things here that I think need to come out.
Fine.
And I also wanted to comment quickly on a comment that was made by Mr. King just now about a policy decision related mm-hmm. to whether any additional restaurants that serve alcohol should be permitted in Dewey Beach. So that would not be an appropriate policy for Dewey Beach to enact. That would not be an example of an enforceable provision. That we're just not going to approve any more restaurants with an alcohol with a license to sell beer, wine, or spirits.
Okay. Now, let me just memorialize this then. If everything is in this, if we put all the conditions that we agreed to verbally today in this ordinance, then they are enforceable, and that would be part of the conditional use officially. So that because what has happened in the past
is
we've forgotten to put them in, or the attorney didn't, and then we got into trouble. I want to make sure that will not happen and assure the public this will not happen.
I think they need to be included, made part of the motion.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it would be helpful to ask the applicant for a statement on the record as to whether they object to any of the conditions.
Now, at the time, if we make a motion, mm-hmm. is that put?
Yes.
Okay. All right. And then the only other thing was I just wanted to mention to the public that for this summer, we will have two police officers that will be dedicated to enforcement. Is that correct, Sam? Yes. So we will have two police officers dedicated to code enforcement this summer. First time that's ever happened. Okay? So, all right. With that, I would like to open the public hearing. And because of the time, I mean, this was, it's 11:15, and we still got a meeting ahead of us. So I'm going to ask that everyone limit their comments to 2 minutes and no collecting of minutes from other people to give somebody 10 minutes, none of that. 2 minutes per person, that is it. They only get one comment, so whatever you want to say, you say it the first time, you will not get a second chance. All right? Those are the rules. And no attacking or nasty comments, or you will be shut off and I'll have police show you the door. Okay?
I want to mention one thing, just a point of clarification for you all. What David King did, and he's already put the together a body of work which included public comments.
Yes.
So they're posted under his March 1st documents.
Right.
Those documents are on the town's website, and those documents were in this folder passed out to you.
Mm-hmm.
That's what those documents are.
Right.
From Saturday on, what I've done is I've kept a public record of all letters that are coming to town hall.
Mm-hmm.
And you all have, you have that in front of you with 10 copies in the event that you want to share them.
Mm-hmm.
On the town's website, under this meeting and the public hearing, is the ordinance, draft ordinance, that was discussed at the planning and zoning meeting.
Mm-hmm.
And then based on those modifications that David spoke about earlier,
mm-hmm.
there's an amended version that is on the town's website, which is read in red under the website. So that's why there were two. It
mm-hmm.
says the amended version. That was posted on the town's
mm-hmm.
website. So the public had access to it. There should be copies here, and you all have copies.
Yeah. And we'll get to whatever those changes are if need be.
Correct.
Okay. All right, with that, I will publicly open the public hearing. Yes?
May I ask a question? I represent 18 different homeowners.
Yes.
And would ask for an extension of 2 minutes, or rather than have 18 homeowners come up to 2 minutes.
What do the commissioners think?
I'm inclined to grant it.
All right, how long? 10 minutes?
What is she asking for?
What are you asking for?
I think 10 minutes would be more than sufficient.
All right.
Thank you.
Okay.
That's typical.
All right, fine. You're the only exception, unless there's any other attorneys here that... Okay. All right, that's it. Public hearing open. I'm going to put Courtney in charge for a minute. I have to excuse myself for just a second. So whoever's first, please come up. Identify yourself by your name and where your property is located. State your comment in within 2 minutes,
okay.
And sit down, okay? Courtney, you're in charge for a minute here. Keep under control while I'm gone for a minute.
Why don't we go with the 18 person representative?
All right.
Ready?
Zoning code or in the Delaware code.
In fact, the word ample area is not used anywhere in your code. Your code defines a use that is incidental to or customarily found in connection with and located on the same lot as the principal use of the premises as an ancillary use in section 116. Therefore, it is improper to analyze this ordinance as an ancillary function when it clearly is an accessory use. Title IV of the Delaware Code codifies the licensure and regulation of alcoholic liquors. That title defines a brewery pub in section 512B as an establishment in which beer is manufactured on the premises of the licensed establishment, limited to restaurants owned or leased by the brew pub applicant. For this title, manufacturer is defined to mean distill, rectify, ferment, brew, make, mix, concoct, or process any substance or substances capable of producing a beverage containing more than 0.5% of alcohol by volume, and including blending, bottling, or other preparation for sale. Part of that definition also defines beer. So from now on, I'm just going to say rather than the production of alcohol with more than 0.5%, I'm just going to call it beer. Section B of Section 515B then lists conditions and restrictions that apply to the holder of each brewery pub license. It must be situated on the premises of or be physically a part of a restaurant. It may brew, bottle, and sell beer in more than three licensed establishments, provided each establishment qualifies as a separate brewery pub under this section. It shall brew no more than 4,000 barrels of beer in any calendar year. And it shall brew, it may sell beer manufactured on the licensed premises for on-premises consumption, at retail for consumption off-premises, and to wholesalers licensed under Title IV for delivery to persons either inside or outside of the state of Delaware. A brewery pub, by this very Delaware statute, is a manufacturer of beer, and that manufacturing process must take place on the premises of or be physically part of a restaurant. That manufacturer's beer is incidental to the operation of the restaurant. Therefore, by statute, a brewery pub is an accessory use and as such must be permitted by the zoning code of the town of Union Beach. When a person applies for a license to sell liquor, that person must submit a certificate of compliance from the municipality indicating that the premises where the license is to be used are properly zoned for the applicant's intended purpose. Title IV states that brewing means not only on the premises where the beer is brewed, but in addition, the operations conducted thereon, including the blending and bottling or other handling and preparation of alcoholic liquor in any form. Again, let me state clearly, manufacture means brew, make, mix, concoct, or process any substance or substances, such as beer, and includes blending, bottling, or other preparations for sale. A brewery is by definition in Title IV of the Delaware Code a manufacturer of alcohol, and that alcohol is beer. For a person to obtain the necessary certificate of compliance for the town of Dewey Beach for operation of a brewery pub, which is by statute a manufacturing operation, the premises where the license is to be used must be properly zoned for such use. Manufacturing is not a permitted use. It is not a permitted accessory use. It is not a conditional use in any of the zoning districts in the town of Dewey Beach. Section 185.14 of the zoning code states that for the purpose of this chapter, permitted uses are listed for the various districts. Unless the contrary is clear from the extent of the list or other regulation of this chapter, uses not specifically listed are prohibited. Let me repeat that. They are prohibited unless specifically listed. Regulations include all charts, tables, maps, and text contained in or referred to in the code. The property that is the subject for Dewey Beer and Food Company LLC's application is located in RB2,
resort business code. According to the zoning code, an RBC district represents the middle level of commercial development intensity with features that include structures that are entirely delineated to commercial land use or mixed use, which is defined by the code to mean not less than one-third of the square footage of commercial land use and not more than two-thirds would be residential land use. Permitted uses, permitted accessory uses, conditional uses, and uses permitted by a special exception for the RBC district are listed in Table 3 of the zoning code. Every use of a property in that district must either be a permitted use, a permitted accessory use, a conditional use, or a use permitted by a special exception. The restaurant is listed as a conditional use in Table 3 from RBC Resort Business District. A brewery pub or any other type of manufacturing use is not listed anywhere in Table 3. Therefore, pursuant to Section 185.14 of the Zoning Code, use of a property in RBC District as a brewing pub is permitted. This prohibition is also supported by the application of the legal canon of expressio unius, which has been repeatedly recognized by Delaware courts. This canon means the expression of one thing suggests the exclusion of others. Specific permitted accessory uses are listed in Table 3 of the zoning code. Uses not listed are permitted. A Glinder's pub, therefore, is not a permitted use, incidental to, or customarily found in connection with a restaurant located on the same lot under the zoning code of the town. Dewey Beach is the exclusive determiner of whether a property is in compliance with your zoning code or not in compliance with your zoning code. The commissioner of the ABCC has no bearing on that determination. We have additional concerns with today's conditional use application.
Excuse me, you have 20 seconds left.
Okay. According to Section 185.39 of the Zoning Code, the purpose of the article on conditional use is to provide for certain uses that cannot be well adjusted to their environment. These uses require the exercise of planning judgment on a large section of the property. This is one of the reasons why a preliminary plan complying with Article 11 of the Zoning Code must accompany an application for approval.
Okay.
An unsealed.
Okay. I said we were not going to allow that. I'm sorry. She had 10 minutes. I would highly recommend. Okay. I'm just saying those rules, 10 minutes, and you said it would take less, and now you're going over. We have a long meeting, so we need your respect at keeping it short.
She represents
okay?
18 people.
I understand, Gary, but we. You know, we can't let this meeting go on for 5 hours.
Well, I'm
you know?
Here to do a job, so I'm here all day.
Fine, we all are.
Just try to wrap up your
yes.
This is one of the reasons why preliminary plans complying with the requirements of Article 11 of the Zoning Code must accompany an application for approval of a conditional use, together with such other information as may be required for determination of the nature of the proposed use and its effect on the comprehensive plan, the neighborhood, and surrounding properties. The preliminary plan submitted by Dewey Beer and Food Company, LLC, failed to comply with the requirements of 185.76. As expressed by one member of the Planning Commission and an engineer with expertise in land planning, the preliminary site plan does not have a seal or a signature of a registered Delaware land surveyor or professional engineer on all drawings. There's also a lacking of certification of plan of accuracy by an engineer or surveyor. Lacking the source of title and several other mandatory requirements under the zoning code. We are concerned that this issue was not raised and not properly addressed at the Planning Commission level to comply with express provisions of the zoning code. In addition, the renderings provided, which were drafted by the applicant's current engineer, do not mirror the site plan drafted by Landtech and submitted with the application. How can a commission reasonably rely on any rendering that is not certified and is two different pictures of the same building? Discussions to date before the Planning Commission have not met and it addressed the safety and potential hazards, safety and potential for hazardous conditions associated with brewing manufacturing operations. The production of beer produces solutions of ethanol, a highly flammable liquid. The raw material for fermentation and mashing process involves handling, storage, and milling of wheat and barley, which generates flammable dust. Grain roasting and drying requires large quantities of fuel, hence all kinds of flammable materials are necessary for explosion in our product. The traffic issues associated with the delivery of raw materials and the pickup of waste, delivery of restaurant supplies, and buses post-brewery service have not been properly weighed, considering the impact of post use will have on the residents of Salisbury and other surrounding streets. The applicant in this presentation indicated that there were no noxious smells created with the operation of a restaurant brew pub. However, at a hearing held April 1st, 2009, before the Town of Milton Planning and Zoning Commission, a representative of Dr. Ted's Brewery testified that there are always odors associated with brewing when grain is mixed with water, and neighbors of the brewery operation complained of those smells. Our research has revealed that throughout the country, there are instances when neighbors have complained of odors created by nearby brew pubs or microbreweries during the brewing process. Some of these areas include Seattle, areas in Oregon, Florida, and Los Angeles. It does not appear that these issues were properly vetted. The record indicates that there was no indication of the effect the traffic or odor would have on property values and peaceable enjoyment of nearby owners' properties. Adjacent to the site are residential properties, many of which are rented during the summer months. The economic impact of commercial trucks and buses on the residential streets and the offensive odors of the burning process should have been investigated much more thoroughly in this case. One planning commission member raised concern about the floodplain requirements under the zoning code and whether the proposed venture constituted a substantial improvement. The applicant provided a letter from his engineer that was a rough estimate of the cost to replace the structure. The code requires a definition of market value. The engineer did not take into account that the structure is on leased land with only 17 years remaining on the lease, nor did he provide the market value of the property as he stated in the letter. Market value is defined by the appraisal institute's Dictionary of Real Estate Appraisal Statistician as the most probable price as of a specified date in cash run times equivalent cash or in other precisely revealed terms for which a specified property right to sell after reasonable exposure in a competitive market.
Ms. Patchell, could I ask you to wrap up, please?
Basically, because we have no definition of market values, it is impossible to determine whether the project constitutes a substantial improvement as defined under the code. For all the reasons I stated, you should vote to deny the conditional use application of Duty Beer and Food Company, LLC. It is your obligation to this town to review and implement the provisions of your code, including the zoning code, when deciding a conditional use application. This application fails on many levels to comply with the code. Therefore, the application should be denied and the ordinance should not pass. Thank you.
Okay, Fred, where do we go from here?
Okay. Well, I'd first like to say that these are the legal issues.
I just want to, I mean, if it's illegal, why have a public hearing? So I need to ask him first.
The legal issues that are raised by Ms. Patchell are not new arguments.
Right, I know.
The Planning Commission has considered the contention that this is not a permissible ancillary or accessory use. Excuse me. There are a couple different arguments here for why this may be appropriate, and it's important for the commissioners to know that I cannot eliminate all risks of litigation, whether it be from those who would oppose this application or from those who would feel aggrieved by a denial of their application.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not going to be able to issue guarantees one way or the other. However, there is a body of law out there that relates to ancillary uses that says that the drafters of the zoning ordinance cannot anticipate every possible ancillary use.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't believe we're going to get into a question and answer.
Yeah,
Do we really need to kind of address every comment that's made?
No, you don't. However, I think this is an important comment.
Yeah, yeah.
And I know Mr. Mahler wants to hear, and the mayor had indicated as well.
Okay.
So So how is it that we can proceed in the face of these arguments? Well, what I asked the Planning Commission to do and what I asked you to do is to focus on the operation that's proposed and to consider that while it is not binding, the state law and the General Assembly have indicated that a brewery pub can be an appropriate use and can be a function within the umbrella of a restaurant. So I think you should ask yourself whether what's proposed is so significant a deviation from what goes on at a normal restaurant operation that it cannot be permitted as a conditional use in Dewey Beach.
So I have one question for you on that point. Are there other towns in the state of Delaware that allow brewing activity in a restaurant to occur without manufacturing zoning being in place for that location?
Well, asked that way, I think the answer is yes. Now, it's difficult to find an exact correlating circumstance because in Dewey Beach, restaurants are conditional uses. The concept of accessory uses is most applicable when you have a first permitted use. In Dewey Beach, we don't have restaurants as a first permitted use. So the whole concept of whether it's a permissible accessory use is, you know, doesn't apply as cleanly as we would like it to. So then the question becomes, can the commissioners be persuaded to believe that these functions, which are being proposed for this site, can be conditioned such that the needs of the public are met? And if you're not satisfied that the intensity of the use at this proposed site is going to be consistent with other uses and consistent with the needs and the health, safety, and welfare of the public, then those would be appropriate grounds for voting no. I would urge you not to rely instead on principles of manufacture versus or commercial uses or chemical reactions and whatnot. I would ask you to confine your considerations to what's in the record because we don't have a lot of expertise here in terms of chemical reactions and whatnot. And I think any judge reviewing this is going to look at the use and not look at the labels in the event that our actions are reviewed by a court. State code says you can do it. Now, you are the final authority on that when it comes to locating a licensee in Dewey Beach. Mm-hmm.
So, in other words, state law allows this, and state law supersedes our law?
No. And that's a point that you have to make. State law doesn't preempt your right to make a judgment that this is not an appropriate site
mm-hmm.
for your zoning code mm-hmm. that is used. State code does not preempt it, but brewery pubs engage in activities which are not a lot different, except for maybe volume,
mm-hmm.
than what another restaurant might do in terms of making pasta, baking bread, brewing beverages,
making donuts.
Making donuts and the like. So if you're not satisfied that the intensity of this use is permissible on this site, then I think that's an appropriate basis for voting no. If you're content that the intensity of the use is not beyond that which is appropriate for a restaurant at that site, then you may vote yes.
All right. With that, I will open the public hearing. Again, 2 minutes per person.
Public hearing, the continuation.
Oh, continuation, I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'll allow people to come up and talk. Is there anybody else who wants to make a comment? Yes? Yes?
This is just a clarification for me and for the, the record. The woman that you spoke was representing a group of people that she represented.
Right.
And she used the time.
Right. So those people cannot come up and talk.
Well, I was asking you.
I think I would not recommend that you tell people they can't speak. But I would urge you and the speakers that if you'd like to be recognized to repeat something that's already been said, that you just merely say you endorse that thought or you don't come up at all. We don't need duplicative
right.
testimony.
Right.
If you have something new to add, then we want to hear from you.
David, comment before we get started.
The prior speaker, I think, indicated in his comments that the Planning Commission did not consider a specific item. I believe, had they listened to the record, the March 1st record in particular, that they would realize that many of the comments they made were inaccurate regarding site plans, regarding traffic, regarding odor, regarding substantial improvement. A lot of their comments were regarding substantial improvement. That's not a zoning consideration one way or the other.
Mm-hmm.
We did alert the applicant that it was likely that they might have to spend more money than they anticipated in renovating their property to meet all applicable building codes under the 2013 International Building Code. And that might trigger a FEMA requirement to elevate the building. But that's a business decision on that part. That's not a zoning consideration. I believe, as I said before, if this were a full-blown, unrestricted brewery pub as permitted by Delaware Code, the Planning Commission would have said no. That would be inappropriate for this site and for the zoning district. That we felt with the conditions, it would be, and that we addressed most of the issues that were brought up.
Thank you, David.
I just want to clarify, I did not add a person to this. I did not say did not.
Oh, all right. Clinton?
Clinton Bunning, point of clarification. The lawyer for the people that she stated made some gross inaccurate statements that I've seen also in the paper that are to their lives.
Mm-hmm.
Ethanol is not, we do not, there's no ethanol produced in the process. That's inaccurate. And it's been stated so many times, I feel we've been defamed and liable. There's no nitric acid ever used. I don't know why anybody would ever want to use that. She's referring to Milton and large breweries.
Mm-hmm.
And I can go on and on, but I just don't feel it's fair for someone to come up here and make gross inaccurate statements, make it over and over, open the paper and hear in public.
No. Okay. All right. Any other? Yes, I'm sorry. You had your hand up. Come on up.
I'm on the corner of Spring Street, and my concern with parking, we want the restaurant to be a success, and it's in the golf course, too. So it's 110 feet, which means about one or two cars coming. There's 110 feet of the restaurant, and people came with a car that's about 42 cars. Assume that walking is 10 tables are taken by people walking, let's say, so it still leaves about 30 cars. There's space for 7 cars. Where do the other cars park? If you park on the streets around the corner, what makes it hard for us to have rental properties for our people to take places to park, and also for the people in the restaurant, it makes it hard because they can get ticketed because they don't have parking permits.
Just a point of order at this point. We're about to hear from a number of members of the public, and they may have questions like this gentleman just stated. Those questions are really to be directed to the commissioners, the commissioners may choose to ask those questions of the applicant at a later point in the deliberations.
Mm-hmm. But my understanding is that they do not require parking in our code. It's just like Nalu and Whiskey Beach and many of the others, unless we change the law, we cannot require them to have more parking than anyone else is required, and are not required to have any for a business of this size by our code.
Right,
and we have to follow the law. Okay, I understand. So it may be something that if people want, we can change in the future, but we cannot change it to apply to this applicant at this point. You understand?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And anything incorrect about that, David? No.
Well, they're currently permitted it. They currently have a conditional use permission to operate a 110-seat restaurant.
period, for 24 hours a day. That's what the current...
They're not increasing their parking requirements.
Right. So in other words, you could have this problem 24 hours a day. Okay. Anyone else? Yes? Yeah, he said he can't. So he can't. Yeah, didn't you give your time to the attorney?
She didn't use the time of management people's time.
She used more than she said. She took 10 minutes and got 18.
18.
Or...
You're assuming that she took every 2 minutes of the people that she met.
No, she was given 10 minutes because she asked for 10 minutes, and then she was given additional time.
So I'm being told that I can't...
No.
Happy with this, you know, it's a bunch of BS going on here. So go ahead.
I really take offense at having citizens testify and being told that it's a bunch of BS.
The process is, she was given 10 minutes, she took 18.
My name is Elizabeth Belgian. I own 18 Carolina Street in Dewey Beach, and I'm here speaking on behalf of the citizens to preserve Dewey. I don't want to repeat what was said by the attorney, but I do want to say that we count on our town officials to uphold the laws and the zoning codes of this town. They were put here to protect this community, and you are the elected representative of the people of this community. Now, I know you'll be keeping account of how many letters you've received, pro and con. I would like to individualize one of those letters, because otherwise they're just statistics. So we got 20 letters pro and 22 letters con. I'd like to read this paragraph from a resident of Salisbury Street by the name of Myra McCullough. She lives at 30 Salisbury Street. And I thought this one paragraph, which you've all seen, but none of the public has seen it, says, and I'll just take it out of the letter, I don't want to take the time to read the whole thing. We already have the Starboard across the street. Of course, unless you live on Salisbury Street, you are probably unaware of all the music and noise that vibrates from there all day and into the early morning hours every day of the week. In addition, we have to deal with the cars of patrons constantly driving up and down our street all day and night, searching for parking spaces. Then early in the morning, as they leave the bar, they are always very loud speaking, slamming car doors shut. They throw cigarette butts, beer cans, paper cups, etc. in our yard. Also, the cars often park in front of our driveway, leaving it impossible for us to get in and out. She goes on, I will not go on, but I do want to say, she has a letter saying, as you, our Dewey Beach representatives, take this proposal into consideration, I would like you to ask yourself if you would vote for such a brewery if you lived beside it, across the street, or down the short block of Salisbury Street. I would guess that if you were honest, the answer would be a resounding absolutely not. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Anyone else? Yes. Yeah.
Gail Cook, Chesapeake Street. I'm a full-time resident of Dewey Beach and have been for many years. I would suggest to you basically two things. Follow what you feel is the law. Follow what you feel is good for Dewey Beach. Follow what you feel you can justify if you had to in court. And vote what you think is proper, not what you think is being pushed upon you one way or the other. If you feel that the situation is that you don't like it, but it's legal, then vote that way. If you feel that it's not proper, not legal, don't vote that way, no matter what you think is good or bad for the town. You've got to do what is right and just and proper for the town, and not what you're being pressured into one way or the other.
Thank you. Any other comments? Sure.
Here, Deep Sweet Street. I guess within the last couple of weeks, I sent all of council a copy of at least a portion of Delaware House Bill 190, which was sponsored by Pete Swartzkopf, which dealt specifically with wineries, brew pubs, and microbrewing facilities. And if you looked at that, everywhere in every sentence, in every paragraph that dealt with brew pubs, the process was called manufacturing. It was given no other name. The only other thing I can say is I think in my limited knowledge that the famous
proposed was primarily a restaurant is somewhat misleading. Again, to my knowledge, the only licensed tavern in the town of Dewey Beach is the Baldwin Court. All the other establishments that we know as bars are licensed restaurants with the permission to serve alcohol.
So one and one?
Yes.
The difference.
The difference.
All right, thank you, Gary. Anyone else? Last call. Any other comments? Okay, public hearing is closed. All right, commissioners, where do we go? You want to take a break? Okay. We're going to take a 5-minute break. 5 minutes, okay? Yeah. All right, 5-minute break. We'll make a decision on it today. I would guess that's what we're going on that today. Yeah. Oh, it's been going on for long time. So I gotta go. Sorry. Yeah.
I'm going to go to the next one. Thank you.